And we should be speaking shortly with Zafar Bengash, and just to bring you up to date as to why we would be doing this, if you haven't seen the front page of your newspapers, there's a whole lot of shaking going on in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And we need to find out from Zafar Bengash why this is the case. Phil, would you make that first announcement again of the Hamilton thing? And because I want to pick up my notes.
Okay, very good. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., Eve Engler, who's the author of Pierre Trudeau's Ugly Foreign Policy, will be speaking at the New Vision United Church, which is at 24 Main Street West in Hamilton at 7 p.m. Admission is free, but we will pass the hat and ask you to help defray costs. And very, very timely because as you know, I mean, any act, government that can pass the Magnitsky Act, you know, is really up to no good on the international scene.
Yeah, there's some – we can go back to the concept of the ugly Canadian. But we are joined by a handsome Canadian now. It's Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, hello, Phil. Yes, I am. And thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, well, I could have also told people you're a prize fighter. I know the whole story about you, Zafar. And someday you're going to have to explain how you became a great boxer. But today, we really need to talk to you because you're the one who wrote the book, The Doomed House of Saud.
The Doomed Kingdom of the House of Saud, yes. And that was in the beginning of 2015.
So you were on to something.
I read the tea leaves very, very carefully. And I've been pursuing the ins and outs of the Saudi family, and I would say that I've got a pretty good grasp of what these people are up to. Mm-hmm. And my reading of the situation was that the transition to the next generation is definitely going to be very messy. Political transitions are always messy. Mm-hmm. Especially in the absence of well-established institutions, of which in Saudi Arabia there are none. So in that case, now that this process of generational transition is occurring in Saudi Arabia, it has become very, very messy. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Saudi Arabia up to this point had basically operated on a number of unwritten rules. Mm-hmm. One was that there was a compact between the family, the ruling family, and the religious establishment. And of course, the religious establishment was allowed to do its part, and the ruling family was allowed to manage the political affairs. Mm-hmm. That has been disturbed. But even more serious than that, the family was able to rule for so long because internally, they kept to themselves. They made decisions through some kind of a consensus among the senior princes. And that has been disturbed in a violent way. And this became even more apparent last Saturday when a number of arrests took place. And these were arrests of fairly senior figures, the most important of which, of course, was Mut'ib bin Abdullah, who was the son of the former king, King Abdullah, and equally important that he was in charge of the National Guard. Now, officially, he became the head of the National Guard in 2010, but unofficially, he managed the National Guard since 1996, when his father, Abdullah, became the de facto ruler when King Fahd had a stroke and he became incapacitated. So if you consider the 21-year period in which Mut'ib bin Abdullah was head of the National Guard, and I would say that the National Guard is the most important institution in the country because it is based on tribal alliances and it is tasked with providing security to the ruling family. And so this was one position that the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman wanted to wrest from the hands of Mut'ib, yes, his cousin.
Bin and Salman is the one you refer to as BS. Yes. I'm sure nothing is intended there except description. Yes.
Exactly. And so he has not only arrested Mut ibn Abdullah, but also his younger brother Turki ibn Abdullah, who was at one time the governor of Riyadh province, and also a person by the name of Khalid al-Tawajri. Now, Khalid al-Tawajri used to be the head of the royal court. Now, when Abdullah was in a coma in a hospital in Saudi Arabia at the beginning or end of 2014, beginning of 2015, Mut'ib, his son, Abdullah's son, and Tawajri kept this a closely guarded secret. And they had a secret plan whereby they wanted to forge Abdullah's signatures on a decree whereby Mut'ib would be appointed the crown prince. And he would have replaced Salman, who is the present king, King Salman. As bad luck would have it, of course, for Mut'ib, Salman and his son Muhammad bin Salman, they got wind of it, and they obviously blocked this conspiracy or this plot from being realized. And so when Abdullah died, obviously Salman took over. And one of his first acts upon becoming king was to sack Tawajri. Now, Tawajri, of course, has been arrested now, along with Mut'ib bin Abdullah, as well as his younger brother, Turki bin Abdullah. And, of course, other people, prominent businessmen, media tycoons, etc., they've all been arrested. The most prominent of the businessmen is, of course, Walid bin Talal, who's a multi-billionaire. He owns shares in Fox News.
He used to have the Four Seasons Hotel, right?
Yes, of course, exactly. And
many times I stayed there, not.
Yeah, he has a private plane worth $485 million. Which has a swimming pool in it, which has four bedrooms. Of course, he has four wives, so he keeps four bedrooms over
Only
there.
Four wives?
Only four. So,
what, is he a liberal?
Exactly. He's a moderate, actually.
Yes, that's very moderate for a Saudi prince.
Yes, because his grandfather had 23 wives.
Yes.
So,
yeah, they probably look at him a little strange.
That's right, yes.
But by the way, I mean, this is so bizarre. Explain to us this. I read in the Globe and Mail today that the government of Saudi Arabia says they're being treated as prisoners, have the same rights as every other Saudi. And, well, actually, the ordinary Saudi doesn't end up staying at the Ritz as a prisoner.
That's
they're
correct.
All at the Ritz.
Exactly.
Who owns the Ritz, by the way? I mean, I think somebody's making some money on the side.
Absolutely, yes. Also, Two members of the royal family have been killed between...
Now, yes, a helicopter crash.
Correct. The helicopter crash, according to the information that we have received, it was not a mechanical failure. It was actually that helicopter was sabotaged. Mm-hmm. And the prince that was killed on it, his name is Mansour bin Mukrin. Now, Mukrin was the former crown prince that Salman dismissed in order to make way for his own son to first become the deputy crown prince and then become the crown prince.
The crown prince is what, the next in line to be a king, is that it?
That is correct, yes.
Now, so he was a finalist, but he got eliminated.
That is correct, yes. Now, this guy, actually, no, not the guy who got eliminated, Mansour bin Mukrim, is the son of the former crown prince. Hmm. So his son, because obviously he probably would have opposed some of the moves that Muhammad bin Salman was making. And another prince, Abdulaziz ibn Fahd, who was the son of the former king Fahd, was killed in a shootout when the security forces went to arrest him at his house. So two princes have been killed, and a whole lot of them have been arrested. Now, one of the strange things is that they did it under the guise of fighting corruption. Mm-hmm. Now, corruption and the Saudi royal family are actually synonymous.
I was going to ask you, how can you tell that a billionaire prince with multiple wives and living abroad, how can you tell if he's corrupt?
Exactly. But
he probably looks like any other prince walking
exactly.
down the street. So what are the key giveaways that he's corrupt?
That's right. You see, but the thing is that, you know, in Saudi Arabia, the country's income is treated as the ruling family's private fortune. They can do whatever they like with it. They can, you know, spend it on their yachts. They can spend it on buying private planes. They can, you know, spend islands. It on buying hotels, islands, whatever. Like, you know, the Saudis are buying an entire island in the Maldives that they want to turn into a casino and sort of holiday resort. And the figures that I've heard of is something like $5 billion. And the Saudis want to build airports on that island. And it will be an exclusive resort where the members of the royal family can go and have fun. So, you know, the amount of wealth that...
They're not just all workaholics. Some of these guys like to have fun.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But now, Zafar, yes, I have to get to another matter about this. And what you've laid out is a family fight. And by the way, I assume our listeners will recognize that if the government is the family, anybody who's ever been in a family feud can understand where this is all going.
Absolutely,
but,
exactly.
But on top of that, but Mr. Hariri,
yes,
the prime minister of Lebanon, just arrived there before all this broke loose, hit the fan, as the old expression is.
Right.
And he resigned as the prime minister of Lebanon while in Saudi Arabia, of which I didn't realize until now he is a Saudi citizen.
That is correct, yes. And his father was also a Saudi citizen, by the way.
So, and I understand that the Lebanese government, suffering from self-respect, says we actually don't accept a resignation of this type in another country. You want to come home and resign, you're welcome.
Exactly.
It seems like the leaves are falling off the trees, as it were. You have the Kurdish crisis. You have the defeat of the ISIS, which was backed by Saudi money, and certainly they were deeply involved. You have a war going on in Yemen where they were going to knock out the Yemen population and install somebody. These things are not going well. Is this part of a meltdown of an aggressive policy by the Saudis?
Oh, absolutely. Hariri's resignation was forced upon him. He was called to Saudi Arabia less than a week ago. In fact, prior to that, the Saudi minister, Shamar al-Shaban, who deals with the Gulf region affairs, he was extremely harsh on Hariri. He, in fact, criticized Hariri and said that, you know, Hariri has done nothing to control Hezbollah in Lebanon, and how can he allow that, et cetera, et cetera. So 2 days later, Hariri arrives in Saudi Arabia, and he's held there on Saturday. He announces his resignation. Now,
I understand he's at the Ritz, by the way. Some people are noticing the photographs. He appears to be at the Ritz, which is now a prison.
Exactly. They're all,
welcome
they're
to
all
the Ritz, and do not try to leave.
Absolutely. And so it's interesting that both the Lebanese president, Michel Aoun, he said that I, as president of Lebanon, cannot accept the resignation of a prime minister when he's sitting in a third country. He should come home and he should hand over his resignation to the president according to the constitution. And he has not done that so far. He cannot be making announcements on for some foreign country's TV network. Secondly, Sheikh Hassan Nasrullah, who's the head of Hezbollah, he also in his speech, he was very, very careful in the way he spoke. He said that we find it extremely strange that Mr. Hariri would do things like that. He would announce his resignation from Riyadh. He said, and in fact, what he said was that he is our prime minister, and we want him to come to Lebanon to resume his responsibilities. If not, then he should hand over his resignation to the president, as is the constitutional requirement.
So Saudi Arabia is losing its grip. Everyone forgot they had a grip on Lebanon. They're losing their grip.
Yes, exactly. You see,
by the way, I haven't even mentioned Qatar.
Yes.
Remember when Donald Trump and King whoever decided they were going to fix Qatar?
Yes, exactly.
It hasn't been fixed yet.
No, there hasn't. In fact, that has been a blow to the Saudis as well, because they thought that Qatar was going to crumble in a matter of a few days, and yet Qatar has held its own. It has not crumbled, and they have made absolutely clear that they are not going to allow other countries, meaning Saudi Arabia, to dictate how they should conduct their foreign policy.
Yes.
And so Qatar is there. And in Lebanon, actually what has happened is that, I mean, something that I think your listeners should pay attention to, that in recent weeks there have been a lot of reports that the Israelis are actually planning to attack Lebanon. Although that would be an extremely foolish, if not suicidal, policy for Israel, because Hezbollah is no longer
Lebanon.
Hezbollah is no longer a pushover. Mm-hmm. I think they should know that. But the frightening thing is that the Americans have actually stationed some of their troops in Israel now. This is the first time American troops, exactly, that they are there. Now, if they are going to be there, just imagine the scenario. So, for instance, Israel attacks Lebanon. What mm-hmm. would happen is that naturally, Hezbollah would retaliate, and the Americans would immediately say, well, our troops are in danger, so now we have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the scenario evolving in Lebanon, and this is apparently what Trump and his military advisors are doing over there. So it's an extremely dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Hariri's resignation, essentially what it does is that now if America and Israel want to attack Lebanon, then they would say that, you know, they are Lebanon is a threat to us, so Hariri is no longer in the picture because, you know, Hariri
yes.
was...
Hariri has claimed that Iran has taken over his country.
That's
and
correct.
They have to confront Iran.
Exactly.
We have hardly mentioned, but, I mean, the Saudis are hysterical on the subject of Iran.
Exactly. What has happened is that all of this is tied to the Saudi-American Qatari-Turkish defeat in Syria, which came about, of course, as a result of Iran, Hezbollah, of course, the Syrian army, and also help from Russia. So their plan, the conspirators' plan in Syria has been completely frustrated. And
yes. Mr. Barzani quit. I left out another guy who just walked off the scene.
There are so many dominoes falling all over the place. It's difficult to keep track of them.
It is, and they are related. It appears to me there is a pattern here. This is like a setback, blowback. I don't know whatever label.
Yeah.
But they two or three years ago, they were going to take over Syria.
Yes, exactly. And they were going to divide Iraq, etc. So that has been frustrated.
But a whole new game is unfolding.
Yes.
Sharmeen Narwani, I know you respect her as a journalist. She's reporting today that the Saudis have asked the leader of the Palestinian
organization to come. Mahmoud Abbas.
They're asking him to come to Riyadh.
Yes.
I would not go if I was him. But
exactly.
They probably want to put him up at the Ritz.
That's
but
correct.
What is that?
Yes, exactly. That's what is planned for him as well.
People are shocked that they can do that, that they can say to somebody, come here. And
yes.
he comes like a dog. They just
yes.
whistle and off he goes.
Yes, because he has been on their payroll, the Israeli payroll and the American payroll, for more than a decade now. And so he cannot say no to them. And this is also
He's approaching retirement.
That's right. And it was also because in recent weeks there has been a rapprochement between Mahmoud Abbas's Palestinian Authority as well as Hamas. And that's something that obviously the Saudis are not happy about, because Hamas also has links with Iran. So they see that, you know, Iran is now getting even more influence in Palestine as compared to earlier on, because at that time Hamas was only in the Gaza Strip. And now, so if there is an agreement between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, then Hamas's influence, and thereby, by extension, Iran's influence, extends to the mm-hmm. West Bank as well. So there are all these scenarios are all working against these evil forces, and the axis of resistance is actually getting stronger by the day.
Yeah. We're speaking to Zafar Benkash, crescent-online.net, and he is the author of The Doomed Kingdom of the House of Saud. He wrote that 2 years ago, so he knew something was coming. But isn't would you agree that their downfall was that they overreached, that they decided in alliance with the United States, and this would be Obama, and this would be the Bush family, as well as the Donald, that they were going to regime change Syria and Lebanon, and they were going to redesign the Middle East, and they were going to give Barzani something, which he apparently did not get.
Well, this was actually, this whole scenario was drawn up immediately after 9/11. This was also confirmed by General Wesley Clark in one of his interviews with Democracy Now! Back in 2007, March of 2007, in which he said that immediately after 9/11, he had gone to the Pentagon, and one of the generals showed him a piece of paper in which the top brass at the Pentagon had drawn up a list of seven countries that they were going to take down, starting with, of course, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, and going on to Libya, Lebanon, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, and of course ending up with Iran. Mm-hmm. And so you can see all the countries on their list. Afghanistan was, you know, attacked and pulverized. Iraq has been badly destroyed. Mm-hmm. Somalia is a failed state. Yemen has been attacked. Libya, in Libya, there is no government. It's in total chaos. Mm-hmm. But I think what they, Iran did was to take a strategic decision not to allow Syria to fall. Mm-hmm. Because if Syria had fallen, or the government of Bashar al-Assad had fallen, then that would have created massive, massive problems for Iran, both vis-a-vis Hezbollah as well as its own situation. So they decided to draw a red line in Syria, and they said that they are not going to allow the government of Bashar al-Assad to fall. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they achieved as a result of massive sort of, you know, paying a massive price in blood and money. And, of course, Hezbollah was also involved, and the Russians got involved because the Russians also did not want to lose Syria after having invested so much in the country.
Well, also, they drew the line. Actually, one of the most dramatic moments was that letter that Putin wrote, which was published by the New York Times, in which he says, you know, you told us that you wanted a no-fly zone over Libya so that, you know, not to see massive loss of life. And then you attacked them. He said, so you cannot be trusted.
Exactly.
So that's over.
Both Russia and China actually took a principled stand on this, and they vetoed three Security Council resolutions in which the Americans wanted to impose a no-fly zone in Syria, but China and Russia would have none of it. Mm-hmm. They said that this is something we cannot accept, we cannot tolerate, and we are going to stand by our ally, the Russians did, and of course Iran did, and Hezbollah did. So in that sense, mm-hmm. the game has been, there has been a radical change in the game that was being played over there. Yeah. So the new Middle East that Condoleezza Rice had talked about when Israel had attacked Lebanon back in July, August of 2006, is now a new Middle East, but not the one that Condoleezza Rice had envisioned.
The best laid plans.
Yes.
The globe is using reformer, let's just end up on a comical note about Mohammed B.S. The globe has decided he's a reformer. And, you know, I have this memory that the Shah was always called a reformer.
Exactly.
But what is the evidence? I look for evidence. What would be the evidence that he's a reformer?
Yeah,
somebody says he allows women to drive cars. I'm supposed to fall over in gratitude? The wealthiest women of Saudi Arabia now can drive their Corvettes or whatever it is, Lincolns?
Yeah, not yet. They're going to be allowed to drive them from next year. Not yet.
Oh, not yet. they have to be probably vetted. They have to be vetted.
Yes,
but
exactly.
This is a totally false image, is it not? I mean, you're not a reformer if you seize all the power to yourself from your relatives.
Yes.
So far, you haven't reformed anything. You've done is given yourself more power.
Exactly. So now he controls everything in the country. Like, you know, he's the defense minister. He's the crown prince. He controls Aramco. He's in charge of economic policy. The two areas that he was not in charge of was the National Guard and the media. So what he has done is removed the head of the National Guard, whom he also considered as a rival, Mut'ib bin Abdullah. He's a royal member of the royal family. And he has taken over the entire media conglomerate in Saudi Arabia. So now he has controlled everything, including, of course, you know, economically, he's the economic czar of the country, and he has this ambitious plan called Vision 2030. But there are very few details as to how he's going to achieve that and what vision. I mean, the whole thing is very blurred. You know, the guy knows nothing. He just thinks that by issuing statements that things will be achieved. That is not going to happen.
Is the father alive and listening to this or watching?
Well, he's...
The king himself?
he's theoretically alive, but he suffers from dementia. And our information is that he knows very little that goes around him. Like, you know, when
he was the one holding the globe, right, with Trump.
That's correct.
In a ghastly picture.
Absolutely. And sort of, you know, he apparently stays awake for an hour and so, and then they have to wheel him to his bed because he cannot stay up for too long. Yeah. And definitely people inside the kingdom have said that he suffers from dementia. He doesn't even remember what he had for breakfast or where he is or what particular day of the week it is. So.
lucky him. I guess he's going to miss out on the great story.
Absolutely.
Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Taylor Report, and remember, early bird donations to the Taylor Report CIUT. Get with it, CIUT.fm. We'll see you next week, and we're going to ask you to become a member. And thank you, Sam. We'll see you next week.
We at CIUT 89.5 FM really like gifts, especially ones that give back. Our annual fall membership drive is November 13th and 19th. Donate now for your chance to win tickets to see Dana Crawl and Bruce Coburn, plus many more fun prizes. Also, membership includes special discounts throughout the GTA. Visit www.ciut.fm for more details.